free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Tuesday, May the 21st, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Good news. The federal government has announced they're going to stop regulating the number of cherries in cherry pie. Maybe that's why we talked about being American as apple pie, because cherry pie was so regulated. That's totally un-American. They said in the past they've had regulations. The FDA is now committed to deregulating the frozen cherry pie market. Specifically, they're going to get rid of the regulation that says that the cherry pies must be 25% cherries by weight. No more than 15% of these cherries may be blemished. 15% of them can be blemished. Maybe you can decide when you go to the grocery store. You know, you might get something that you don't like, and then you don't buy that again anymore. Imagine that. A marketplace where you make decisions, where you vote, and you get what you choose. Instead, we're going to have the nanny government regulating that for us. And of course, we always used to hear, as American as mom and apple pie, you don't hear that too much anymore, either one of those. I mean, maybe people still like apple pie. Moms are not celebrated so much, and yet we see at InfoWars that leftists are raging after the New York Times reported that the happiest wives of all are the wives of religious conservatives. I can't have that go out. So we're going to take a look today at some of the regulations that are coming out. We have, I guess, a new category. I guess we should call ourselves now agents of hate, because we find out that Facebook has a list of people they call hate agents. And that would be, of course, all of us who have just been kicked off of Facebook. We are labeled as hate agents. But then they have some other people that they have down there listed as extra credit. These are people who are pending lifetime banishment from Facebook, and eventually they hope to be the web, because that is the model of Mark Zuckerberg. Total, complete monopoly and dominance. And so that means that, he would banish you completely. I would say that if we are going to be called hate agents, maybe we should just embrace that and start calling ourselves agents of hate. You know, like agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And we can have an acronym for that. H-A-T-E, with periods behind it, just like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Humans Against the Technocratic Elite. How about that? We'll call ourselves Agents of Humans Against the Technocratic Elite. We're going to take a look at some updates of this. We'll spell out for you what the hate agents are. They're getting more and more information released from the people inside these groups that are very concerned. You know, people inside of Google, people inside of Facebook are alarmed at what they see happening. And so they're leaking information from time to time. So, you know, you got to take a look at this. This is really dangerous. That happened, of course, with Dragonfly as well. Many people inside Google leaked to the press, leaked to Intercept and others, the plans, the secret plans that were being kept, just among a small group of people in a need-to-know environment. The idea they're going to be working with the Chinese Communist government to control search results, as if they're not doing it here already. We know they are. But of course, even as President Trump comes out and says, hey, I need your help. I want to start collecting all the instances of how you've been shadow banned and listed as a hate agent or whatever, banned from all these different things. And either overtly or covertly, you believe. You've got people like Oliver Darcy pushing back, saying, it's just his imagination. It's just a conspiracy theory. But Oliver Darcy, CNN, BuzzFeed, they have their own conspiracy theories, don't they? And they're very quick to label people as agents of hate. So we're going to embrace that. Humans Against the Technocratic Elite. And we've got a lot to say about so many different issues. We got Joe Biden. We got Justin Amash. What's up with this guy? I'll tell you exactly what's up with him when we come back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Tuesday, May the 21st, year of our Lord 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to take a look at what Facebook calls hate agents. And I say we embrace this. Let's call ourselves, as I said at the top of the hour, agents of hate. H period, A period, T period, E period, just like agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., except what we are humans against the technocratic elite, like Facebook, like Google, who seek to control us by controlling our speech. This article first came out, the first time Breitbart talked about this was on Friday. They said that they had a source inside Facebook that gave them evidence, printed a list, printed a spreadsheet, evidence that Facebook maintains a list of so-called hate agents that they will monitor and potentially terminate. And on Friday, they said among the names reported on the hate agent list was Candace Owens. The source claimed that the spreadsheet includes the names of prominent right-wing and alternative media figures who were recently banned from the platform. That would be us, Alex Jones, InfoWars, Paul Joseph Watson, Laura Loomer, Milo, Gavin McInnes, me. We're all banned. So we're already hate agents, according to them. We say we're agents of hate. Against the technocratic elite. Candace Owens was also included in the spreadsheet in a separate category marked extra credit. To me, it just looks, it's obvious that these radicalized lefties have been totally immersed in a school system all of their life. Extra credit. Oh, I'm putting your name on a list. Permanent list. I've got this on your permanent record. Yeah, these are the little brown-nosing nerds that I could not stand in school. I didn't want to be anywhere around these people. I wanted to hang out with the people who didn't take school too seriously. I did not take it seriously, let me tell you. Along with instructions for Facebook employees to look into Candace Owen after, quote, we're done with the above designation analysis. In other words, I'm going to go after Alex Jones, InfoWars, these other people I just mentioned. And then we're going to look into Candace Owen. And they're not going to stop. Just look at what the DNC and Elizabeth Warren are all talking about Fox News. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. They're next up on the list. Tucker Carlson, all these people. Oh, yep. Sean Hannity. Tucker Carlson's been good about defending us. A lot of people on Fox haven't. Don't really understand where this is going. But that's where they're next on the list. So they're going to look into Candace Owen after they're done with the first people that have been, and I consider it a title of honor to be listed as a agent of hate by Facebook. That's an honor. The source agreed that the extra credit category refers to individuals that Facebook has not yet banned, but will be investigating for potential hate speech violations and potential banning in the future. This list was sent to Breitbart, and again, this is the Friday story. We got an update on this. The same day that Candace Owens was, quote, mistakenly given a 7-day suspension from Facebook. Why? Because she criticized liberal attitudes towards African Americans, something she talks about frequently in her public appearances. Her post called on black Americans to, quote, wake up to the great liberal hoax, unquote, and to recognize that liberal supremacy, is what she called it, is currently a greater threat to black Americans than white supremacy. And after they censored her on Facebook, and she complained about it on Twitter because, you know, they didn't do the same thing to her that they did to Alex Jones and InfoWars, suspending across all the different platforms at once. Yeah, so they did to Alex Jones. So she was still able to complain about that. She said to sent a tweet, addressed it to President Trump, said, "Dear Real Donald Trump on Twitter, my Facebook page has been suspended for 7 days for posting that white supremacy is not a threat to black America as much as a father absence and liberal policies that incentivize it are. I am censored for posting that poverty rates in fatherless homes. In other words, what the liberals have done, because it is massive in its effect, is to create a system of dependency on the government. And now they're doing it not just to black people. And quite frankly, the black people weren't the first ones to get it either. The first people that got this were the Native Americans, the Indians. They were the first beneficiaries of the reservation system, or, you know, the welfare system, if you wish. Going to confine people to a particular area, essentially, and control their economic mobility, right? There were a lot of prohibitions as to what the Indians could do. They took them away from their way of life. They had a bureaucracy that controlled them very tightly. So the people that were put in charge were handsomely rewarded by the American government. This is a system, as Russell Means has pointed out, that was then later added to black communities as a basis of the welfare state. And now it's being extended to us in general, everybody. Get everybody on the welfare state. As a matter of fact, they want universal basic income for everybody. All of us. They're going to put us on the reservation. They call the reservations in the 21st century, they call them smart cities. Same idea. Same idea. But the way that they're going to control us here is not by, you know, putting us, surrounding us with soldiers and so forth. That will happen to those people who push back on it. But it's really the tactic of what they do to control, take away our guns. They did that to the Indians as well, of course, right? They did that to the black people. That was a big part of gun control in the early days. Make sure that the blacks don't have guns. And so they took away the guns from the Indians, took them away from the blacks. They, you know, kept them in a confined area, pacify them by giving them, you know, a little bit of money, just a little bit of money. And that's what they propose for everybody with universal basic income and smart cities. A Facebook spokeswoman replied, said, as we've said earlier today, we mistakenly applied a temporary block to Candace Owens' account that we have since restored. We recently announced a group of people that we removed from our services for violating our policies. Candace Owens was not one of those people. Yeah, except that she's on the extra credit list to be considered for this. And then on Sunday, Breitbart followed up on this and said, oh, we got somebody else that we found on their list of hate agents. Lebanese American conservative author and critic of religion. Her name is Bridget Gabrielle. She is also on the internal list of hate agents maintained by Facebook. You know, when I look at this and think about this, one of the things that was a big deal when I was young was Richard Nixon and his enemies list. He had an enemies list. What about Mark Zuckerberg and his enemies list? Should we be concerned about that? Does Mark Zuckerberg have more power about how to shape society than Richard Nixon did? I think he's got a lot more influence, quite frankly. A lot more dangerous. Yeah, we've had people like, you know, Nixon, the Stasi in the past, but they didn't have the kind of power that the technocratic elite have. William Binney said he spent his entire career, pretty much, watching East Germany and their secret police, the Stasi. But he's told me, I've interviewed him multiple times, and he said it multiple times, he said, what we already have in this country, with the NSA, with the surveillance state, and understand that Facebook and Google and Twitter, they're a big part of that. They're a big part of that. They can scrape all that information off. They don't even have to have it handed over to them by Facebook, Google, and Twitter. They can just publicly scrape it off. He said, what we have is more powerful than the Stasi, more dangerous than the Stasi, more pervasive, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, these godlike powers that this technology gives these people. So I would say that Mark Zuckerberg's enemy list is far more dangerous to Americans than the enemy list of Richard Nixon because of the technical power he has. Humans against the technocratic elite. We'll be right back. guess as we listen to the Four Seasons, you may think that we're headed into summer, but actually we're headed into winter. And we need some winter soldiers. Don't be afraid of being labeled hateful, because that's just a label coming from Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. Consider it to be an honor to be labeled as such. As I pointed out in the last segment, we had some whistleblowers inside Facebook releasing some screenshots to Breitbart both last Friday and then again yesterday about individuals that were on their list of hate agents. And at first, on Friday, they talked about Candace Owens. They said a partial screenshot reviews Candace Owens' name is on the list, along with the instruction for Facebook employees to look into her after we're done with the above designation analysis. You know, after we're finished with the people that they just banned for life. Well, now they've got another one on Monday, as I said, Bridget Gabrielle, another hate agent. According to them, they said when they go through this, a little bit more information about the list itself here from Breitbart. In this spreadsheet that they have set up, they have right-wing figures and a few left-wingers, mostly right-wing. They have signals that indicate that the individuals might be hate agents. Level one would be signals that occurred in the last year. Level two, 2 years old. Level three, 3 years old. So they're going to keep that there. Not only that, but as we've pointed out in the past, and we've had people leak this, I think even Zuckerberg himself. So we're going to look at what people are doing outside of the platform. We're just not going to punish people for what they do on Facebook. We're going to look at who you are. It's geospatial intelligence. This is where this is all coming from. You have to understand the singularity. The singularity is not just corporations working with governments. That's always been done. You've got the big guys always getting their preferred subsidies, you know, like Elon Musk, the king of crony capitalism. You've always had that kind of singularity. And that goes back to the robber barons of the 19th century. And even older than that. But, I mean, that was when it was really came into its own here in the United States. But now there is a different kind of singularity. This technical singularity is where these people have, these different tech companies, have common cause with geospatial intelligence, the fastest growing part of our surveillance state, the police state here in this country. Folks, if you think that Comey and these other guys coming after Trump is something that's novel, that is a new kind of corruption, you haven't been paying attention. The entire internet was set up to do this. We had whistleblowers right after 9/11. William Binney and others say they're violating the law. They're doing dragnet surveillance of the American people. We had James Clapper lying to Wyden saying, we're not doing that. And then a month or two later, we had the leaks from Snowden showing exactly that they were. Why did he do that? Because nobody in Congress cared about what the NSA whistleblowers are saying. So Snowden released the information that way in a massive amount. Still, nothing happened. And it goes back earlier than that with the old technology that they had. As soon as they were created, the CIA, NSA, right after World War II, began spying on the American people, doing wiretaps, phone taps, listening every way that they could. But they just didn't have the kind of technology that they have today. Today, they have geospatial technology. They can monitor everywhere you go. They can map your political beliefs, your religious beliefs, and they can do it to individuals, to groups, to your physical location. They're mapping the human domain so that they can master the human domain. Remember the slogan for Jade Helm, master the human domain? They call it activity-based intelligence. They use it to anticipate what you're going to do, pre-crime, minority report type of stuff, ABI. It's all there. And, of course, a vital part of this is social media. There you go, watching everything that you do. Being able to monitor everything that you do, predict everything that you do, but also to feed you propaganda in a much more sophisticated way than the mainstream media ever was able to do with just the control of broadcast television and the major newspapers. They can also monitor your response to make sure that you are embracing the messages that they're giving you. And if you're one of these people that has kind of a thick skin and a backbone and you're not easily swayed, they'll just remove you. Just remove you from social network. And it will be a network to gaslight and control those who remain. And so what are they doing here to Bridget Gabriel? You know, you've got these three different levels of signals. You know, you have signals, level one, level two, level three, depending on whether it's 1, 2, or 3 years old. The spreadsheet also includes a recommendations field. Facebook employees can advise whether or not the individual should be categorized as a hate agent or not, and whether or not they should be removed from the platform. In other words, it is subject to their subjective prejudice, bias, bigotry, political orientation, because the Facebook employees are creating this list. And whether or not they're doing this on a spreadsheet or whether or not they're doing it and masking it through an algorithm, it's still going to have their bias in it. It's just like I've said all the time. There is no such thing as objective news. No such thing. Anybody who tells you that is either a fool, a liar, or both. Because the very stories that you put out there, that you choose, that you think are important, are going to reflect your political opinion, your bias, your religious opinions, and so forth. Even if you were able to do it in a totally even-handed, objective way. No, the people that you should pay attention to are the ones who are honest about where they're coming from. Look at the events as described. Give you an analysis and tell you why, and you can make up your mind. So, that brings us back again to Bridget Gabriel. She's founder of the Islamic extremism watchdog Act for America. They added her to the spreadsheet in the main category. Under level two signals, this is signals that are 2 years old, a Facebook employee notes that Gabrielle might face a potential violation for having security at an event provided by a D-org, a designated hate organization, although the name of the organization is not mentioned. So they have their designated organization, a D-org. I guess we could just call it Dorgs. The employee also notes that Gabrielle spoke at, listen to this, this is really bad. She spoke at Christians United for Israel event. She referred to Arabs as barbarians. That was tier one hate speech. Well, I referred to the invasion that we have at our borders, regardless who it is coming in. If they're going to come into this country in uncontrolled numbers and they don't care what our laws are, they're going to come here, they're going to camp out here. They're going to be given the right to vote by the people who are their partners, inviting in this fifth column. I've called them barbarians inside the gate, referring to Rome. Another instance of tier one hate speech is her comparing Muslims to a disease, calling it Islamic cancer. Well, I guess that's one of the things that got me kicked off as an agent of hate. I constantly refer to Facebook as a cancer. I refer to the federal government as a cancer, and they are. Agents of hate. Humans against the technocratic elite. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I'm talking about the list of hate agents that Facebook has. And we're just talking about the case of one individual who focused on Islamic extremism, has an organization that is a watchdog organization for that. And because she spoke at an event, Christians United for Israel, for example, Facebook considers that to be a banned organization. And so because she was associated with them, she gets a tier one hate speech check mark next to her name, next to her permanent record, evidently, because they don't just have level one, level two, level three, looking back at 1, 2, or 3 years worth of stuff. As they point out in this article on Breitbart, the first incident occurred in 2007. The second one was in 2015, so one of them is 12 years old, the other one is 4 years old, yet they're listed in the level two signals, which means that they would be 2 years old. What difference does it make, right? Because this is all subjective. It's all about the biases and the prejudice and the hatred of Facebook towards people because of their political viewpoints and their religious viewpoints. And so Facebook employees, as I said, had not yet added a recommended course of action for Gabrielle at the time this list was given to Breitbart. However, it has an ominous message. It says, lifetime deletion for hate speech and dehumanizing. That is their recommendation. Think about that. Lifetime deletion for hate speech. And again, hate speech is subjectively determined. Just think about the judge who is now coming after President Trump, saying, well, you can't withhold your personal financial income tax statements from years ago. It's an Obama judge, right? But we've seen this type of thing happening from judges all along, typically over immigration policy. Think back to January of 2018, a year and 4 months ago. The judge who blocked the DACA appeal, going back to September of 2017, President Trump became president in January 2017. By September, they came out and said, well, we're going to stop processing DACA applications. And Jeff Sessions, who was Attorney General at the time, said, I'm here today to announce a program known as DACA that was effectuated under the Obama administration is being rescinded. And the court system said, you can't do that. You can't get rid of an executive order by the Obama administration. We're going to treat that as if it's constitutional law, and we're not going to let you do that. It's like, where did they get that authority? They don't have the authority to do that, but, Jeff Sessions played along with it. And you have a judge who blocks it. And what was the basis of him blocking it? It was purely subjective. It was in January of 2018 that Judge William Alsup said that the Trump administration's attempt to repeal DACA was made in order to help Trump gain political leverage. And so he says, because I don't like what you said on Twitter, he referenced a tweet that President Trump had put out. Said, because I don't like what you said on Twitter, I'm going to judge your motivation. See, this is the essence of what we get into and things like these judicial decisions as well as hate speech. We're going to judge your motives. It doesn't matter what you say or do, actually. We're just going to, I've got on my Carnac the Magnificent hat, and I'm reading your mind now, and I think that you're a hateful person. You're associated with people that I hate, so you obviously are a hateful person. I hate you. So you're hateful. And so that's basically what this judge did. The motive was political. Well, kind of a hate motive. The law doesn't matter, right? We've seen this multiple times, these judges. And you're not going to be allowed to end an Obama administration executive order where the Homeland Security Secretary said, I'm not going to obey my oath to the Constitution. I'm not going to enforce the law. I'm going to defer enforcement of the law. You're not going to be allowed in the Trump administration to say, we're going to start enforcing the law. That's what the judges said. I mean, think about how absurd that is. It's Kafkaesque. You cannot say, we're now going to enforce the immigration law. See, nothing changed, except the Obama administration just said, we're not going to enforce the law. No laws changed. They never got a DREAM Act passed, but they call them dreamers. And said, well, we can't pass a DREAM Act, so we'll have Obama and his Homeland Security Secretary do an executive order. We'll treat that as if we had passed the DREAM Act, and then the judiciary will say to everybody, you can't change that. You can't change that Obama-era executive order. And President Trump plays along with that for political reasons as well, saying, well, I'd like to fix it, but I've got to have I'm going to get rid of it if you don't give me something that I want. But of course, he doesn't ever get rid of it. And they don't ever give him anything he wants. But let's go back to the First Amendment. Because the poll that came out by the Knight Foundation, no relationship to me, actually, shows that students on campus, surprisingly, don't think that free speech applies anymore. We take a look at these people at Facebook extra credit. I've got a list. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. These are people who have spent their entire life in educational institutions. They are completely shaped by their institutional experience, these nerds. You know, I had a friend of mine who went to West Point. He's very successful. He retired as a colonel and everything. But whenever I would meet, whenever we get together and we had other friends and I would introduce him, I would tell people, because I knew it got under his skin, I would tell people that he and I were incarcerated in a state institution for 3 years. He didn't like that. But that's the way I viewed my term in high school. I really felt like I was in prison. And he it implied that he had been in prison with me. But I really was. And so that's why, you know, when I look at this list that I've been put on by Mark Zuckerberg as a hate agent, I embrace that. I'm an agent of humans against the technocratic elite. But let's go take a look at the First Amendment. They said nearly half of the students believe that hate speech should not be protected. 41% of college students, said the Knight Foundation, believe that hate speech is not protected under the First Amendment. And it's much higher for women and for blacks. 53% of college women said, no, if I don't like what you're saying, it's not protected speech. And a majority of black students as well. 41% of college students believe that hate speech should not be protected under the First Amendment. 58% believe that it should. But understand, women and blacks want to shut you down. That's the core constituency of the Democrat Party. The Democrats want to shut you down if they don't agree with what you have to say. Which goes back to the free speech. It is absolute, folks. You understand this thing we hear all the time? You can't shout fire in a crowded theater. Where did that come from? Well, that was a decision. That came out of a court decision in 1919, a Supreme Court decision. And actually, what it says was you can't falsely shout fire in a crowded theater. So that brings us back to, well, is it true or false? Who gets to decide what is true or false? Oh, that'd be the same people who get to decide whether or not you're hateful or not, right? And understand where this is coming from with this Supreme Court. This Supreme Court that said you can't do this. What was the basis of that trial? Was there really somebody on trial because they shouted fire in a crowded theater falsely? No. The person they were gagging was a defendant who was speaking in opposition to the draft of World War I. And all of you liberals, this is the same Supreme Court that said that movies don't have free speech. And they sent a movie producer to jail and fined him a massive fine because Woodrow Wilson wanted his war, his World War I war. He actually did a movie. Spirit of 1776, went to jail, got a fine. The Supreme Court said, movies are not protected under the First Amendment. They said, you can't shout fire in a crowded. This is what they will do to send you to war. You better understand the war has already started. You can see it in the free speech attacks. Well, you know, some types of hate are allowed and even celebrated and encouraged. For example, we have Jim Carrey. You saw the pictures, I'm sure. I don't know what's worse anymore, Jim Carrey's acting or his drawing. But he's got a hateful picture of the Alabama governor depicted as a fetus and being sucked out with a tube. And he says, I think if you're going to terminate a pregnancy, it should be done sometime before the fetus becomes governor of Alabama. So I'm looking at that and I'm saying, well, what does Jim Carrey hate? Does he hate babies? Does he hate the governor? Or maybe he hates both. Maybe he hates women. I don't know. I mean, you could read a lot of hate into this, but it's okay. So it's fine with Twitter. You know, he can do this kind of stuff. But if you have James Wood, quoting a philosopher from the 19th century, that's banned. But this kind of stuff, that's fine for Twitter. That's fine for Twitter. 57-year-old Carrey, as they point out, has now produced dozens of pieces of vulgar, sometimes violent, anti-conservative artwork. He's previously claimed that it is his way of dealing with pain of life under the Trump administration. Maybe what he's doing is dealing with the pain of a has-been career. It is a desperate search, folks, for applause on social media when he can't get it at the movies anymore. He said, I feel feelings. And it's the only way that I can deal with them is to turn them into something positive. And he said, all pain equals art. Well, not all pain. Because the pain that Jim Carrey is doing, if you've seen the trailer even for this the newest movie that he's in, Sonic the Hedgehog, I'm sorry, that pain did not yield any art. Certainly didn't yield any art there in his hateful cartoons. Here's another example of hate that is just fine and allowed. Vandals hit a Pennsylvania church with pro-abortion graffiti. Hashtag pro-choice. And I'm sure, you know, that's fine. I think probably put that all over Twitter, and it's okay. Just spray paint the church there, the Catholic Church in Pennsylvania, with pro-abortion graffiti. Or let's take a look at this kind of hate. Chick-fil-A targeted for another reason. This is not Austin and Buffalo saying you can't open up a business because we control the airport. We're not going to let you in because you gave money to the Salvation Army. Well, now they've got another group that's after them. It's an LGBT blog. They call themselves Out Sports. And quite frankly, they're not very good sports at all. They're targeting Chick-fil-A because Chick-fil-A gave $1.65 million to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes to support summer camps for inner city Atlanta youth. So that's not allowed, right? What is it that OutSports doesn't like about that? You can't give money to a Fellowship of Christian Athletes, especially to help poor kids in the inner city of Atlanta. No, no, no. They're hateful, and we're vindicated for hating them. OutSports complained that they had a continued association with an organization that is rooted in specific religious beliefs. There you go. They don't like the religious beliefs. They don't like the organization. They don't like the association with that organization. So just like the little social justice warriors at Facebook that have spent their whole life in an educational institution being brainwashed and gaslighted, they want them to be eliminated. And they want them, they're attacking Chick-fil-A. They said the OutSports real problem with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes is this. They require, quote, a policy of sexual purity. Can't have that. It forbids them from participating in heterosexual sex outside of marriage or in any homosexual act. It defines those acts as not constituting an alternative lifestyle that is acceptable to God. Oh, can't have that. Can't have that. We're going to ban Chick-fil-A, but we will celebrate booty gay everywhere. Chick-fil-A bad, booty gay good. Everywhere, right? Virtue signaling for the LGBT people. And it was just last Friday that the Democrats in the House passed the Equality Act. James Dobson continues to speak out against that. He says it is a thinly veiled death sentence to the First Amendment. He said in the history of our nation, there have been times when evil was so apparent and so heinous that they stand in infamy decades later. Things like the Dred Scott decision on slavery in 1857 or the Roe v. Wade ruling that legalized abortion in 1973. Now we're faced with another such tragic moment in American history. So the Equality Act would embed the LGBT agenda in U.S. law. Specifically, it would make the Constitution's protections for religious freedom of no account if they conflict with LGBT wishes. And again, these people have lost all connection to the concept of free speech. Even the radical leftist Voltaire, in a summary of what he wrote, all of his life, this isn't a quote from him, it's a summary of what he wrote about extensively. I may despise what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Why? Because he's also defending to the death his right to speak. And these kids who have been institutionalized, who have been taught to hate people whose opinions they hate, who want to silence what they can't debate, they have embraced this kind of censorship. Dobson went on to say, let me speak candidly and passionately to people of faith throughout these U.S. the United States of America. We must not remain silent as our historic liberties are gutted by Democrats and the LGBT movement. They will enslave us if they prevail. And make sure, folks, you understand that. They're not looking for toleration. I mean, there's no Christians that I know of, except for a couple of radical people like the Westboro Baptists or the Pastor Steven Anderson. There's nobody that is calling for violence against homosexuals or jail sentence for homosexuals. No, we tolerate that. Just as we don't call for a death sentence against people who commit adultery. We advise people that's not a good thing for you or for your family. It's not the best that God has for you. But we tolerate it. That's not enough for them. They demand that we celebrate it. They demand, quite frankly, that we worship what they do. We worship. You think that's too strong? You think I'm talking in a hyperbole when I talk about worship? Do you know what worship actually means? You look at the etymology of the word. It means really being worthy of dignity. It means glory, honor, and distinction. They want us to honor what they do. They demand that we honor what they do. Not just that we tolerate it. We have to honor it. We have to worship it. We have to declare it worthy and dignified. No, we're not going to do that, ever. And when you talk about the Democrats, okay, they don't have the votes to push this any further than the House because that's what they control. That and then something like the Supreme Court. And yesterday I talked about the efforts to extend their control because they can't win elections, to extend their control through the judiciary. And even the proposal put out by the neo-Marxists, Buttigieg and Pocahontas, say, oh, let's add more people to the Supreme Court. We've got 9 people there now. Let's add another 6. That'll get us to 15. Those 6 will be added by the people who are already in the Supreme Court. They'll get to pick those people into that organization. And as I thought about it last night, I thought, what they're doing is they're openly talking about a Supreme Court that is patterned after the Communist Politburo. The Politburo had 15 people in it. It was the supreme organization that set policy for the Soviet Union. And the people in the Politburo is like a little club. They would decide who was going to come into the Politburo, just like Buttigieg and Pocahontas want to do with the Supreme Court in the United States. And that really is what they have become. They have become a Politburo. Think about it. Think about how they dictate everything in our lives. I'm just talking about free speech. No, movies, they're not protected by free speech. You want to protest the draft? That's not protected by free speech. That was the Supreme Court in 1919. They changed in the middle of the 20th century. Depends on who's on the Politburo, right? We should not have anything like that in America. We should reject that. But from henceforth, I am now going to call the Supreme Court the Supreme Politburo because that's really what they are, and that's how they act. All right, we're about out of time in this segment. I want to tell you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com because that's what funds this program. And we have some specials to make it easier for you to be our sponsor. If you're not our sponsor, we go away. But we got some great products and some great sales. We got 50% off the Ultimate Bone Broth. We have 50% off all apparel. We have 50% off our new Ultra 12, which has twice the vitamin B12 as our Secret 12 did. And we have a special for the listeners of this program. Just enter the code WAKEUP at checkout to save 10% off of Wake Up America coffee. That's our 100% organic coffee. And don't forget to follow me on Twitter, Libertarian, or subscribe to me on YouTube. You'll find me at youtube.com/Libertarian. Become an agent of hate.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's talk about some other politically correct hate. And that is the politically correct hate that Justin Amash is directing towards President Trump, being celebrated by the mainstream media for doing so. And where is this guy coming from? Well, I'll tell you, if you been paying attention to Justin Amash. I mean, we look at some of the things, and it's like, well, okay, he's a Republican. That doesn't make any sense. Why would a Republican do this? And he's a co-founder of the Freedom Caucus. Why would he push back against President Trump. Mark Meadows, the other co-founder of the Freedom Caucus, says Mr. Amash's conclusions are poorly informed and fatally flawed. As the Hill points out, since this is a political disagreement rather than a personal misconduct issue, Amash will not be kicked off of his sole committee, the Oversight and Reform Panel. And he's not going to be kicked out of the Freedom Caucus either, because he co-founded that. But they're going to push back against that. They said, again, Mark Meadows, the other co-founder of the Freedom Caucus, said, I know of no other Freedom Caucus member who shares his views on President Trump. But see, Justin Amash has got a lot of issues with President Trump. It doesn't have anything to do with the Mueller investigation. It has a lot to do with policies. And with who Justin Amash is. You know, we look at Justin Amash, he puts himself forward as a libertarian, celebrated by Reason Magazine, celebrated by the Cato Institute, the Koch brothers, and so forth, because he embraces open trade and open borders, among other things. Yeah, he's good on some civil liberties issues. But, you know, I disagree with him on these fundamental issues, and he strongly disagrees with President Trump. For example, a week or two ago, when President Trump said, talking about what was going on with China, he said, we have lost $500 billion a year for many years on crazy trade with China. No more, tweeted President Trump. Well, Justin Amash replied to that and said, a trade deficit is not a loss of money. If you buy from a supermarket or you go to a movie, you have a trade deficit, but you have not lost money. You get stuff, groceries, entertainment, etc., in exchange for dollars. That is the line of the Koch brothers. That is the line of the Cato Institute, these libertarians who applauded NAFTA. They all told us, oh, these Chinese people, they work for nothing. You want that. You want that. Believe me, you want that. Well, we all, many of us said it's going to result in the deindustrialization of America, and it did. And the kind of trade deficit that we immediately began running with Mexico, we'd had a rough parity between the two countries prior to NAFTA. It would be plus or minus $3 to $5 billion between the two countries every year. Some years they would be up, some years we would be up. But as soon as NAFTA went in, the trade deficit with Mexico went to $17 billion and never came down. It got as high as $70-some-odd billion in some years. We have lost hundreds of billions of dollars in the last 25 years. Never had a trade surplus with Mexico ever. And it's even worse with China. It's been the loss of quality jobs, manufacturing jobs that are high-paying jobs. And this is something that the libertarian branch that Justin Amash represents will not admit. And, you know, the situation is if you go to the supermarket and you buy stuff, you have a trade deficit with them, okay? Well, if you keep doing that and you keep spending more money at the supermarket than you have, then even on a microeconomic basis, you go broke, and that's what's happening in this country. He also strongly opposed President Trump. He said that the declaration of an emergency at the border violated the Constitution. No, it doesn't. As a matter of fact, President Trump has a constitutional obligation that he's not fulfilling to act more strongly, to use the military to defend our borders. Why is he not saying this about, he says, it strikes at the very heart of Congress's spending powers laid out in the U.S. Constitution, but war he's not concerned about? Right, he doesn't have anything to say about that. Yeah, Congress should declare war. Congress should do the budget. Well, they're not doing any of that stuff. They're not even writing the laws. They let the bureaucracy do that. But he doesn't have a problem with that. Now he's getting a primary challenge. But let me tell you, one of the things that he hates about President Trump, Justin Amash is a Palestinian, proud of the fact that he's a Palestinian. So that's another one of the issues that he has with President Trump. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I was just talking about Justin Amash and, of course, the issues that he has with President Trump don't have anything to do with this Mueller report. He's been calling for Trump to be taken out for a long time. He's never Trumper because he doesn't support borders for the United States. He doesn't support manufacturing for the United States. I mean, that's basically what these policies have done. NAFTA and the trade policies for China that are promoted by many libertarian organizations, by Reason, by Cato, by the Koch brothers, by Justin Amash, by that crowd. It's a shame that we have to have this bifurcation between civil liberties and a country and an economy. We all understand. They deceived a lot of people with the arguments that, oh, no, no, we should have no taxes at all on products that are going across the border. And it's not a problem that we're exporting our manufacturing to China or to Mexico. That's not a problem. And now we have seen, yes, it is a problem. We have deindustrialized the United States, and it's not a good thing. And again, as I pointed out, that is a scheme of the banksters. It was the central banks, as they imposed their power on us with the Federal Reserve Act, created the income tax. They changed the structure in America from one that collected the federal taxes at the border and left everybody inside the country tax-free. As Jefferson said, no farmer, no laborer, no mechanic knows the tax man. Well, we got just exactly the opposite of that. Now we have every farmer, laborer, mechanic knows the tax man, and the tax man knows you. The tax man, however, does not know the bankers of the multinational corporations. They get by scot-free, and they're the ones who impose this regime on us. And it is making us poor and dependent on China. And we're going to get to that in a moment. We're going to talk about this escalation between the U.S. and China. Now the Chinese President Xi is starting to make overtures, like he's going to restrict the export of rare earth minerals. We've talked about this for a long time, how China was strategically sewing up access to rare earth minerals, not only within their country, but also extending their influence with the Belt and Road Initiative, acting much more intelligently, quite frankly, than the U.S. government. We try to do that type of thing using the military as if we're some kind of 19th century imperial power. They come in and they offer subsidies and they get economic control of these areas. And they have economic control of most of the rare earth metals. And that is something that is vital to our defense industry. It's vital even to our consumer goods. I mean, the really good speakers that are very small that you put in your ears, I mean, that's rare earth metals. Make that possible, those kinds of strong magnets, a lot of different technological products. And so now they're talking about throwing that weight around as Google, surprisingly, I guess they're starting to feel the pressure from the Pentagon, starts to fall in line with President Trump on this particular issue to a degree. There's a limited amount of this, a lot more posturing than there is substance in what Google did. We'll talk about that coming up as well. But I just want to finish up with a little bit more about hate campaigns that are allowed. It was reported by an Italian analytics firm, and this is actually an article from RT, that there is a coordinated hate campaign against President Trump on Instagram, which is owned by Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg. Italian researchers have uncovered what they have called a, quote, coordinated social media operation on Instagram that is intended to undermine President Trump with many identical posts using hashtags like hashtag hate, I hate Trump, hashtag impeach Trump. Yeah, see, some hate is good. If you hate President Trump, you hate Alex Jones, you hate conservatives, that's good. You hate Christians, you hate Chick-fil-A, that's good. We're going to celebrate that. That's allowed. It's just the people that they hate that are going to be banned. So, you know, you're going to have some hate that is going to be pushed, and then other speech is going to be purged because they label it as hate. Ghost Data, an Italian analytics firm, said the U.S. president had been targeted by fake profiles created specifically to spread extreme and sometimes even violent anti-Trump messaging in an organized and coordinated way. The study identified a network of 350 anti-Trump Instagram accounts. And they said the post generated from this operation generated more than 35 million interactions, with 3.9 million of them happening within the last 2 months when the campaign swelled dramatically. Interactions for the top 19 accounts were growing exponentially. They said the accounts all posted similar or identical content. Many of the messages were published just a few minutes apart, indicating that it's robots, right? You think it's Putin doing this? Let me tell you something. When you look at these types of campaigns here, and of course it's being allowed by Instagram, they're telling Reuters, we're investigating. Yeah, right. Facebook, Zuckerberg, Instagram need to be investigated. And they need to be clamped down. If you want to say that the Supreme Politburo, that some people call the Supreme Court, if you want to say that they are writing law for us, well, then go back and look at the law that they wrote in 1946, saying if you, even if you own the public square, you're not allowed to kick out free speech. Enforce that law from the Supreme Court. You want to enforce Roe v. Wade to murder tens of millions of kids? Well, they're murdering our free speech as well. Brad Parscale, who is the campaign manager for President Trump, he was his media guy in the last campaign, put an op-ed piece out on Breitbart. And it's not just Brad. We'll take a look at what Parscale said, but let's take a look at what Tulsi Gabbard said about free speech versus big tech. She said this on the Joe Rogan show. Let's Joe Rogan Experience. This is Tulsi Gabbard.
Let's talk about free speech. There's just been news recently about Facebook banning certain individuals from having Facebook accounts because of their speech. They disagree with the speech that they're using or the things that they're talking about, the ideas that they're pushing forward. Unchecked. First Amendment rights going completely out the window.
And the argument is they don't apply because it's a private company, right?
Yes, but they're trying to get the best of both worlds. The fact that you know, they're claiming to say, hey, this is a free space for open communication for everyone.
Right.
While at the same time going and saying, actually, you know what, Joe, I don't like what you're saying about this, so we're going to ban you and whoever your friends are from this conversation. I think that's a big problem.
Yeah, she gets it. She gets it. And I'll just reiterate again, when I was taken down, this show was taken down off of YouTube. I was taken down without any warning, without any strikes. I'd never had any strikes against me. I'd never been notified of anything. I never got an explanation. Instead, I got 8,000 emails over the next couple of months, spread out about every 10, 15 minutes, saying a complaint has been received and your account has been terminated. A complaint has been received. Your account has been terminated 8,000 times. Did it first, and then I said on the program, I said, you know, they never, they took us off in the middle of this program. I said, I've never been given any strikes or any warnings, any indications as to violations. And they didn't do anything for about 8 or 9 hours. And then every 10 or 15 minutes for a couple of months, they sent me that repeated message. That's the power these people have. And so Brad Parscale says the mainstream media response to the new White House initiative from President Trump, and we'll give you some of those responses, expressed precious little concern over the notion that the tech oligopoly is abusing its power over ordinary Americans. Instead, they're trying to gaslight us by implying that social media censorship is all in our heads. That would be people that he's referring to, like CNN's Oliver Darcy. He says CNN's Oliver Darcy, for instance, uses his platforms, both online and on cable TV, to claim that President Trump is cherry-picking and misleading us about the problem, and that big tech bias is just an allegation and a narrative. Darcy recently set his sights even higher, tacitly urging Twitter to ban the President of the United States, saying, what's the difference at this point between Trump's Twitter feed and InfoWars.com? That's Oliver Darcy. That's what passes for a journalist in the 21st century. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Guardian, very upset about the fact that President Trump, they said, is taking the war on abortion worldwide as his policy cuts off funding of abortions. To which I would ask, why are we funding abortions even outside of this country? And that is something, as they correctly point out, I looked at this and I thought, well, this is nothing new. This is something that began with the Reagan administration. Basically, it's the only thing that President Reagan did. You know, President Trump has been much better on the abortion issue than even Ronald Reagan was. Ronald Reagan instituted what was called the Mexico City policy that would deny U.S. federal funds to any organization involved in providing abortion services overseas or counseling women about them. But let's just understand, I think we need to shut down not only our foreign wars, but our foreign aid and our foreign subsidy to these people. Let's take care of Americans. Isn't that putting America first? Doing that kind of stuff? I mean, why would we, whenever we give money to foreign governments, it typically doesn't go to the people who need it anyway. It's stolen by the corrupt officials in that country, whether it's Somalia or Venezuela, you name it. They are the ones who wind up getting it. Just goes into the pockets of dictators. It's another reason why we shouldn't be engaged in foreign aid. Then, of course, you know, if we give aid through the welfare system, it goes mostly into the pockets of bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. as well, setting up political power for them as well. So I don't support the welfare system. I certainly don't support, as California is doing, giving health care to illegal immigrants. We've got Joe Biden has been talking about that. Yeah, I just think we give health care to everybody. Well, now you've got the governor of California, Newsom, and these idiots in California saying, well, we're going to do it up to the age of 25 or 29 or whatever. They're debating as to how high they'll go. They're going to give it to everybody all the time. We've already given free education to anybody who wants to come here. Now they can get free health care. I think President Trump, instead of trying to reform welfare for Americans, he needs to end it for foreigners who are criminally trespassing in our country. Isn't that a win-win situation? I mean, you could sell that to people. You could sell it not to the Democrats who want to use this as a power base, but you could sell that to the rank-and-file Democrat voter and you could say, we're going to end foreign aid. We're going to end foreign wars. We're going to end welfare for foreign citizens coming here illegally. And maybe what you do is you even end it for people who immigrate here. Say, for the first generation or two, you're going to have to support yourself, which is what they do in every other country. And you say, we're going to take care of Americans first. You know, I know you're not going to be able to get rid of the welfare state all at once in one shot. We just do, that'd be a big win for people who don't want to see this country flooded. It'd be a big win for the Democrats who are voting, who are legitimate voters, American citizens. It seems to me like you couldn't lose with a policy like that. Instead, they just keep dithering with this. It's amazing to me. But President Trump takes on the abortion policy worldwide, as they point out in The Guardian. This is something that has been revoked by every Democrat, the Mexico City policy. So Democrats come in and say, nope, we're going to fund abortions without restrictions everywhere in the world. Can't kill enough babies. Even in foreign countries, we're going to kill babies. And it's reinstated by every Republican since Ronald Reagan. So what's the big deal? And say, well, it's even worse when Trump does it, right? It's not anything different, really. They said one person who is a progressive, quoted by The Guardian, said the global gag rule hits hardest the women living at the margins, the poorest, the most remote, and those under 25. Oh, really? You think so? As I said the other day, abortion has hurt those people the hardest. I talked about the fact that in India and in China, in India, they estimate 37 million more men than women. In China, they estimate 35 million more men than women. So you're talking about 35 to 40 million more men than women in those two countries alone, each of those two countries. That means that since, you know, you have a slightly higher natural birth rate for women than you do for men. But at least that many girls have been killed. Baby girls, 35 to 40 million in each of those two countries in order to have that imbalance. And I said at the time, I said what this is resulting in is not only a female genocide, and then I saw a story from the BBC where they call it femicide, the selective abortion of females. Well, you can call it female genocide or you can call it femicide, whatever you want. But that is a product of being able to tell the sex of the child, kill them while the mother is still pregnant with them, or kill them at birth. Or as they did in China in many cases, abandon them for adoption. So that is falling on the women there. And here's an example of how this works out. In North Korea, for example. North Korea is kind of a client state of China. Everything that North Korea has of any value, they sell to China. Coal, for example. Or women. as I said when I talked about this, it's not just the 35 to 40 million baby girls that were ripped apart in the womb or were murdered after birth in those two countries. It's also the women who survive, because now there are a lot of frustrated men who are looking for wives that they can't get. And so you have a lot of these women in these two countries are being sold into sex slavery, human trafficking, slavery as prostitution. And what the way this is looking in China, a report from Zero Hedge, talks about how North Korean sex slaves are being sold into China. So that's one of their biggest products, the biggest exports. They export coal and girls to China because the Chinese need the coal and they need the girls because they kill their baby girls. Tens of thousands of North Korean women and girls are actively trafficked into the Chinese sex trade by criminal organizations. They're often forced to endure systematic rape, sex trafficking, sexual slavery, sexual abuse, prostitution, cyber sex trafficking, forced marriage, forced pregnancy. This Guardian, this Democrats, this Hollywood is a result of your abortion policy. You want to talk about how the poorest, the most remote, and those under 25 are affected? That's how they are affected. If they're not killed, many of them, tens of thousands of women just in North Korea. This is not even counting the women from other countries or the women within those countries, within China, within India, that are put into slavery as prostitutes because of the femicide or the female genocide. So the victims are commonly aged between 12 and 29. They're overwhelmingly, of course, female. Many of them are sold more than once, and they're forced into at least one form of sexual slavery within a year of leaving their homeland. Girls as young as nine, are forced to perform graphic cyber sex acts and are sexually assaulted in front of webcams, which are streamed to a global audience. Prospects for North Korean women and girls trapped in China's multi-million-dollar sex trade are bleak, said the report's author. Many victims have perished in China, while a small rescue organization of Christian missionaries struggled to perform rescue work. Who is it that's rescuing these girls? Is it the Democrats? Is it Planned Parenthood? Is it Hollywood? No, it's Christians. Christians. We'll be right back.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We've got a lot of news here. We've got Matt Bracken joining us on the next hour. I want to get into what's going on with Google, Huawei, China, the United States, the Pentagon, all these different issues. This is all coming to the head around 5G. You need to understand how vital 5G is to the Internet of Things. IoT, you see that all the time. When I look at IoT, I don't see the Internet of Things. Because quite frankly, folks, you are one of those things that they're going to put into their web. It is a web of control. And if they're going to treat you as a thing to be inventoried, to be watched, to be monitored, to be controlled, I call it not an Internet of Things, but IoT is an Internet of Tyranny. It is a vital technology for them to be able to implement autonomous cars, smart cities, and so forth. And they don't care what it's going to do to your freedom. They don't care what it's going to do to your health. But there is a massive fight that is being waged with the biggest corporations in the world, the tech corporations, the Pentagon, the American government, and the Chinese government as to who's going to control you. Are you going to be controlled by the American government or by the Chinese government? I don't want to be controlled by either. I don't want to have something that is going to destroy my freedom and destroy my health. So we're going to get into that. We're going to take a look at those issues there. But first, I want to take a look at what's going on. And the run-up to this, of course, you have all the major multinational corporations are aligned Now, they've all gotten the message. You know, Volkswagen had to be brought to heel because they've got a lot of different car companies that are under the Volkswagen label. That was why it was so vital for them to get the $4 billion fine, have an executive actually put in jail because they, quote unquote, cheated on emission scandals. Now it's quite a bit higher than that. It's up to the tens of billions of dollars. They got the message very quickly. They said, we're not going to do diesels anymore. Yeah, we got a very, very efficient, very reliable, very durable diesel engine. We're not going to do that anymore. We got the message. You locked one of our executives in jail, nearly put us out of business. You know, we have acres and acres of brand new cars that we can't sell to anybody. We got the message. So they're going to come out with a classic 1970s van, you know, Scooby-Doo type of van, VW van, electric. They're going to come out with the Bug electrified. They're going to do all the old classic VW cars, immediately came out with it as an electric car. And they can do that pretty quickly because it's very easy to create an electric car. Not nearly as complicated as creating an internal combustion engine and all the mechanical issues. All you have is just an electric motor. They're pretty generic. And batteries. It's all down to the battery technology. You just put it on a chassis and screw the thing together. You know, they and part of the complexity and the cost of the internal combustion engines, gasoline and diesel, was really being encouraged by the automobile industry because they wanted to use that as a way to keep competitors out. Even when you look at the new Supra that came out, Toyota's saying, well, we couldn't do a new engine. It's just too expensive for us. Well, they're looking at this and saying, well, we're going to get rid of engines in a couple of years. So, you know, BMW's already working on something. We'll go with that one. We'll just plug that in. Because we don't want to put a bunch of R&D in something that's going to be banned in just a couple of years because they've already put a limit on it. They've already said in the UK, we're going to ban all internal combustion engines, gasoline and diesel and even hybrid by 2040. And you've got Dyson, the guy behind the Dyson vacuum cleaners. I'm sorry that I bought one of those years ago now because he's out there telling the British, you've got to move that forward from 2040. That's just too long. You've got to ban all internal combustion engines by 2030 because I've got an electric vehicle. Of course. Of course he does. It's not a complicated thing. He understands electric engines. And so it's going to be a very, very easy thing. And as Eric Peters has frequently talked about, what's going to happen to the various performance niche models like Porsche and Ferrari when they can't do gasoline? Their advantage goes away because now they've got the same batteries as everybody else. They got the same electric engines as everybody else. Their cars don't perform any differently. They don't sound any differently. You know, it's not anything to do with engine design. And Ford is seeing this coming as well. Ford, not only earlier this year, they said, well, people aren't buying cars anymore to a large enough extent. So we're going to stop making cars, except for the Mustang, essentially. And then they brought in some Euro Econobox that hadn't been sold before in the United States. But they shut down all the Fusions and Focuses, except for the one that they're bringing in. Kept the Mustang for now. Shut down everything else. So we're just going to do SUVs and trucks. And now they're looking at this and they say, well, you know, we want to be a mobility company. Basically, they want to become Uber and Lyft. So that's what's behind them saying they're going to cut down 10% of their salaried workforce. And 7,000 white-collar jobs that they're going to be getting rid of pretty quickly. And here's a novel solution from Seattle. This is a woman who was born in India, came to the United States, and she has identified as one of the most radical politicians in the United States. Many people in Seattle have said that she's more radical than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She was the one who began the push for $15 an hour minimum wage and other things. But she is a socialist. She identifies. She's part of the Socialist Alternative Party in Seattle. Her name is Sawant, I think, is the way you pronounce her name. And she has a solution to drive-by shootings in Seattle. Speed bumps and flower beds. I kid you not. Speed bumps and flower beds. And why not? Because we've got all of our urban planners have been telling us for the longest time, they call those types of things traffic calming measures. We put speed bumps everywhere. So you got to creep over these things and scrape the bottom of your car if you got a low car like I do. They call that traffic calming. Doesn't make me calmer. Makes me angry. When I see those things in the neighborhood, makes me very angry. I get very uncalm. I start cursing the profession of urban planners. You know, the Lyft CEO was trained as an urban planner. And I'll have to get that report. I had it years ago. I think I did a special on it. But of course, special report has now been flushed by Google, so I could do it again for you. But I talked about his essay, and it's absolutely amazing what he had to say. In a nutshell, as an urban planner, he had learned that cities are the best thing that man's ever invented, and cars are the worst thing. It's just that simple. That's why when we had automobiles in the middle of the 20th century, we immediately used them to escape the city. They don't want that. They call that urban sprawl. That's got to be stopped. You got to keep the people locked into the cities. And you do that by getting rid of their cars. Except that even in the time of Thomas Jefferson, he said cities were a threat to the health, the wealth, and the liberty of mankind. And that is especially true today with the smart cities. Boy, can you imagine what Thomas Jefferson would have said and done about the UN agenda for smart cities that they're going to foist on us by 2030. That's why Dyson is saying that. He's right there with all these globalists. He's a made man. Made man, part of that mafia. So they're saying we need these traffic calming measures. You know, they have other measures that they call road diets, you know, where you narrow the road. You carve out bicycle lanes that nobody ever uses in our cities, right? Not until they ban all the cars and you're forced to ride a bicycle everywhere. Nobody's going to use that as long as they got access to a car. But it makes the traffic much worse, even though there's nobody in those bike lanes. My wife and I went back to the city I grew up in, Tampa, Florida, and there were bike lanes everywhere. We were there for a week, and I saw one middle-aged guy over that entire time. I said, that's him. That's the guy that they cut half of the roads out for, that one guy. And that's basically it. But she thinks, because like a Democrat, she doesn't understand human nature. She doesn't understand that these people who are doing the drive-by shooting are acting out of a corrupt heart. And it's just as dumb as the conservatives who said, well, we got to stop all this stuff by a war on drugs. That's where we got the drive-by shootings in the first place. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. You know, we were just talking about Ford. They have laid off, they're going to lay off 10% of their workforce, white-collar jobs, about 7,000 jobs. You know, it was just only about a year and a half ago, Ford was doing really well. They had a good product line, selling well, very profitable company, but they got rid of the CEO. They fired him. Why? Because Wall Street demanded somebody who was more focused on the future, where they were going to be renting cars by the ride. They need a mobility CEO. And so they fired him and they elevated to the level of a CEO, the guy who is head of their mobility. That's what they call themselves. They don't call themselves a car company anymore. Just like GM and all these other companies, they consider themselves to be mobility companies because they're not interested in even trying to sell you a car. They know they're going to be banned and they can make more money renting these things to you. So as we're talking about rented cars, this story was absolutely amazing out of Zero Hedge. They had me at gunpoint. Hertz customers in Florida are getting arrested for driving stolen cars. Yeah, they're going to be stealing all of our cars pretty soon. But, I mean, this is happening right now in Florida. If you rent a car from Hertz there, you're going to be randomly pulled over and arrested for no reason at all. This is according to The Drive. They said customers of the Florida rental vehicle company, Hertz and that particular office are being erroneously stopped and arrested due to a faulty computer system and just bad management at the company. As a result of Hertz reporting stolen vehicles to the police when they were actually just being legitimately rented by the customer, ABC News has exposed the fact that in a few cases, people even had weapons drawn on them. And let's understand, this is another part of the issue of America that we live in today. the fact that the police react this way. There was an interesting story because there's a Mario Andretti documentary that's coming up. And he's kind of a raconteur. And he was talking about one day that he and another relatively famous car person were driving. He wasn't driving. He was a passenger in the car. And they got pulled over by the police. And the cop walks up to the driver and he says, "Who do you think you are, Mario Andretti?" And Mario Andretti is there in the car in the passenger seat. He says, "No, I'm Mario Andretti." And the other guy gave his name, which and he was fairly, I forget what his name was, but he's fairly famous back in the day. But the cop didn't recognize his name, but he says, "Oh, yeah, you know." I told my wife, I said, today they'd probably get shot by the cops for that kind of stuff. They don't, choking is not allowed by many of the police. I mean, we've seen story after story of abuse because the system defends it and tolerates it. But yeah, it's pretty dangerous to be pulled over by the police now. And so when you got somebody, especially if you got a stolen car, boy, they are ready. I mean, this was just a speeding ticket. And the guy got pretty upset with him, you know, 40 years ago. Yeah, you're Mario Andretti, right? But these people are getting pulled over. The police think that they've stolen a car, so they have their guns drawn on these people. Several of them were taken into custody forcefully because they disagreed with the cops. You don't talk back to them now. You don't joke. It's like the TSA at the airport. You don't joke to these people. You don't joke to a flight attendant. Boy, they'll get real authoritarian. That's the world that we now live in. Isn't that disgusting? I think it is. Some of the customers even wound up spending several hours in jail, with one case resulting in someone spending 2 weeks in prison. 2 weeks. They rented a car from Hertz, Florida. Hertz reports it wrongfully as stolen. And the person gets arrested, spends 2 weeks in jail. Why? Because they probably didn't have a lot of money. In almost every instance, the people who were renters and were arrested erroneously for being car thieves are now left to fight the charges alone, in addition to the corresponding fines. So basically, the car companies just walked off. Car rental company. So you've got ABC News, you've got other news organizations down there saying, you know, exposing what's going on. So that's when you rent your car, right? And of course, you know, we look at the different ways that you can get your transportation. You know, people prefer, as we've seen from the pictures of the New York subway car that was littered with trash. I mean, that's one of the reasons why people don't like to drive public transportation. And you're not going to like it when you're renting these cars by the ride either. When you got fully autonomous cars and you're renting these things by the ride, who's going to know if the drunk in front of you threw up all over the seats and floor? Nobody's going to be cleaning that up, right? Yeah, you're going to really enjoy that future they've got planned for you if they get through with this. Take a look at what's going on right now with Uber and Lyft drivers. They're very upset about the fact that they're being used by these companies. And so they've come up with a way to game the algorithm. Uber and Lyft drivers at Reagan National Airport have been gaming the system every night, several times a night. They simultaneously turn off their rideshare apps for a minute or two. That tricks the system into thinking that there's no drivers available, and then the algorithm creates a pricing surge. According to the ABC channel there, ABC 7, they said when the fare is high enough, drivers turn their apps back on and they lock in the higher fares. The Uber-Lyft parking lot outside of Reagan National Airport fills up with 120 to 150 drivers, sometimes for hours, waiting for the busy evening rush. And nearly all the drivers have one complaint. Uber doesn't pay us enough. What the company is doing is defrauding all these people by taking 35 to 40%. They are taking all the money. And there's no system of accountability, said one of the unidentified drivers. So they're complaining that after 3 years of declining income, they're now fighting back by artificially manipulating the algorithm. They said, we know when and where the airplanes land, so 5 minutes before we turn off all of our apps, all of us at the same time, all of us turn off our apps and they surge. The price goes up $10, $12, sometimes $19. Then we turn the app on and everyone gets the surge. You know, this is what Amazon is now telling people. They said, you know, we're going to do layoffs. We'll give you 3 months severance pay. But if you want to start delivery, we'll give you $10,000 to start a delivery business. So you know where it's going to end up. It's going to end up where these Uber and Lyft drivers are. Because then they're going to, first they're going to use these people in place of UPS, maybe in place of the post office. And then, of course, the post office isn't going to go out of business. They may have a financial collapse if they can't raise their prices, but they'll be allowed to raise their prices. But as they drive UPS and others out of business, they're also going to cut the throat of these people who start to drive for them, just like Uber and Lyft have cut the throats of the drivers. They even said it years ago. They said, you know what makes that car expensive? It's that other dude in the car with you. We're going to get rid of him. We're going to have autonomous cars. To give you an idea of where this is going to be headed, there's an article on Car and Driver. And, of course, these people are always cheerleading the big car manufacturers. They want to make sure that they have access. So that's the key. You know, you're a political reporter. You want to kiss the behind of a political party to make sure they all come on your program. And you don't want to criticize them too harshly. And so that's the situation. That's why I like Eric Peters, because he doesn't do that. But these people do. The Mercedes-Benz ESF is a one-car showcase of the way safety will look in the future for vehicles. And they point out that it is assumed that they're going to have autonomous cars. They said, unlike the vehicle that they rolled out a couple of years ago. But now, they said, most striking is the, you know, they had one in 2009, and they said, well, you know, our big technology is going to be autonomous cars. That's going to make everything safe. But now, here we are, a decade later. And they said, most striking in the thinking of Mercedes-Benz is the idea that when cars can drive themselves, there will still be a need for in-car occupant safety measures, including seatbelts, airbags, and many other things that they're going to add to it. Because Mercedes firmly believes that even autonomous cars will still crash. Car driver said, we think that's smart thinking. Yeah, they are never going to have accident-free technology. Just take a look at what happened to Tesla as their stock dropped 8% after the most recent death. What kind of safety equipment are you going to put in a car to keep it from killing the occupants when the autonomous car drives under a semi-trailer? Maybe Mercedes can answer that for us. It's going to drop the floor out from underneath you as the car goes over to try to take off your head. Folks, got to take a break. We're going to be right back. Hey, listen, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can find me at Libertarian, both on Twitter and now on YouTube, Libertarian. We also, of course, have many radio and TV stations. Make sure you support those sponsors of those radio and TV stations. And you can also find our archives not only on YouTube, not only on Infowars.com/David-Knight-Show, but we also have a lot of podcasts available on TuneIn, on iTunes, on Spreaker, on iHeart, many different places you can find the podcast, as well as on Infowars.com. We also have it there as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is the David Knight Show.
Trying to make some sense of it all, but I can see it makes no sense at all. Is it cool to go to sleep on the floor?
Welcome back. You know, we have the FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, and I talked about this briefly at the beginning of the program. Tweeted out and said, read my statement on our regulatory agenda contained in the just-released Fall Unified Agenda, and our mission to, among other high priorities, deregulate frozen cherry pie. A lot of people thought he was joking. He's not joking. Do you realize that our benevolent masters in Washington have been regulating frozen cherry pies since 1977? As a matter of fact, as FEE points out, the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE.org, as they point out, frozen cherry pies are the only fruit pies that have to meet specific regulations. And they said, perhaps, maybe the FDA will even loosen its requirement on the size of holes in Swiss cheese. This would be funny if it wasn't for the pervasive regulation of the most minute details of our lives by the regulatory bureaucracy. As I've said before, there's absolutely no way that a representative body of legislators would have the time to go into this much regulation of our lives, you know, and singling out one kind of flavor of pie versus another. I mean, there's no regulation on frozen apple pie, for example, but we have a cherry pie standard. Evidently, the people who make cherry pies didn't have the friends on the FDA board that the apple pie people did. So the apple pie people are going to sell more pies than the cherry pie people will. What is this about? You know, the standard was no more than 15% of the cherries could be blemished, and it had to be at least 25% cherries by weight. So, you know, we can't figure these things out evidently for ourselves. And our elected representatives don't have the time to get into this kind of minutia. So we have a massive regulatory bureaucracy that is constantly cranking out 80,000, 90,000 pages a year of new regulations. Some of them accompanied and treated as if they are felonies. This is a very dangerous situation. Yes, this is a joke, seriously. And the FDA commissioner realizes it, and I'm glad that the Trump administration does. If this were the Elizabeth Warren administration or the Buttigieg administration, they'd be looking at ways to not only keep the cherry pie regulations, but add them to apple pie and a pumpkin pie, and you go down the list. So I'm glad that they realize the absurdity of the situation, but do you realize how we have been taken over by permanently entrenched bureaucracy that is unelected, unaccountable? We have not only taxation without representation, we have legislation without representation. That's the real issue behind this cherry pie story. They don't even get into that with a foundation on economic education. That truly is the issue. And when they can regulate this kind of stuff, they also, the same people, the FDA, the CDC, these others, are deciding that they're going to mandate vaccines for you as well. I just talked about how they're making a case for how lethal colds are. Yes, of course, you can die from a cold called pneumonia. And they're saying, well, we think that, even though we've already identified 160 different strains of cold, we have synthetically engineered 50 of those. So they've got a third of them that are synthetically engineered. They're going to put them in a vaccine, and they want to give that to you. Because, you know, it puts you out of work if you've got a kid who's sick at home with a cold, and they could die from pneumonia. Same thing we're seeing with measles. Here's another story from The Hill. Every day this hits. Measles outbreak spreads to 24 states. And you know, if anybody was seriously ill or had died, that would be the headline. That would be the headline. But they got to panic you because they want to sell that. Even supposedly libertarian organizations like Reason Magazine. Meet the teens who want to get vaccinated against their parents' wishes. Oh, it's a hip thing now to get vaccinated. Get stuck. That's what these pricks are trying to tell you. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You have a U.S. district judge nominated by President Obama. Has now ruled that President Trump cannot block a House Democrat subpoena of his financial records. This is why President Trump should have stopped judicial tyranny in its tracks when they started ruling about what he could and could not do to protect America's borders. By submitting to these people, by letting this pattern that has been established by previous administrations continue. And it is not a constitutional pattern. Thomas Jefferson said Marbury versus Madison, where they arbitrarily gave themselves the power of review over everything. He said that's going to be the end of the Constitution. And it is the end of the Constitution. You had, shortly after him, you had Andrew Jackson. And Andrew Jackson had the Supreme Court, which said that he could move the Cherokee. And then they saw how horrible that policy was. And they said, no, you can't do that. And they changed their mind within just 1 year. Andrew Jackson said, well, they've given their opinion. Let's see them enforce it. He went ahead and did what he wanted to do. And he had the constitutional authority to do that. And they don't have any way to force you to obey them. That's what Alexander Hamilton said. He said the least dangerous, he thought, branch of the federal government, and that's the way everybody, even the most statist founding father, Alexander Hamilton, considered the federal government to be a dangerous experiment. They were afraid it was going to become what it has become, an imperial leviathan dictating everything about our lives, even how many cherries we can have in a frozen cherry pie. And perhaps something very substantial, dictating that we have to get vaccines, that we have to have pre-disease action, you know, anticipate an outbreak. Because that's really what we're talking about here, folks. This is kind of a pre-crime issue to mandate vaccines. Well, you know, we've got all these vaccines out here, and we've got issues with immunity because the vaccines aren't working very well. If they do convey immunity, it only lasts for a certain period of time. So we got to keep revaccinating people here. And you could possibly be a threat to us if you got sick. And if our vaccines don't work, then you could be a threat to us. So we're going to force you to get a vaccine. And we don't really care what you think. We don't care if you're concerned about the things that were added to it to preserve it, like formaldehyde. We don't care if you're concerned about the things that have been added to it, like aluminum, to agitate your immune system to try to make it more effective, or other chemicals that they've now added. We don't care if you're concerned about whether or not it was properly stored and refrigerated, because we've had toddlers in the Samoa islands that have been killed immediately because they were vaccinated with vaccines that weren't refrigerated. We've had massive riots in China that the mainstream media doesn't talk about because people there were damaged. They said, well, maybe it was manufacturing issues. Maybe a lot of these cases, the vaccines had expired and they were injected with them anyway. But of course, you know, here in America, even if it's a toxic substance that's put in there as an adjuvant or as a preservative, or if there's a manufacturing error, or if there's a storage error, or if there is a vaccine that has expired, none of those things get the company sued because they've got immunity. And so it's very important that we understand how this kind of tyranny is being put in place by an unelected bureaucracy, an unaccountable bureaucracy, by an unelected judiciary, an unaccountable judiciary. And now they've ruled that President Trump can't block a subpoena of his financial records. And President Trump is saying, well, I'm going to challenge that. Well, he should have challenged what they did before. Now that he didn't, now that he has basically embraced this stuff, it's come home to roost. And it's going to be that way with each and every one of us if we don't get that power back from the judiciary. As I said earlier, you know, this whole idea of the Supreme Court, it really has become the American Politburo. And you even have Elizabeth Warren and Buttigieg saying, well, we got to add six people there. It's going to get it up to the same number that the Soviet Politburo had. And they're going to define what policy is everywhere, in every aspect of our lives. And this is the issue that I see in terms of abortion. I don't think the federal government should be deciding that. They don't have the power to decide issues like that, like mandatory vaccines, like marriage, many of these other issues. Those should be decided by the various states. That was the design. That is a wiser way to do it. It allows for some aspect of freedom. If you don't agree with the policies on marriage or on abortion or on vaccines or whatever, if it's not imposed by the federal government, you have a chance to go to a jurisdiction where it's more to your liking. And you have more control when the elections are closer to you. You know, Washington is too distant. It's too centralized. It is a one-size-fits-all solution. Nobody should like that about these very controversial issues. And yet we have this Politburo. And they even want to add six people, say we're going to let the existing Supreme Court pick the new members. That's exactly what they did with the Communist Politburo. It is the Supreme Politburo of the United States, the Supreme Court has become. And this kind of judicial tyranny that we see, the White House is now saying they're going to cite immunity, and they're going to block Don McGahn from congressional testimony. Well, we'll see. If there's a lawsuit, well, they'll all bow down and worship whatever the judiciary says. This is one judge saying they're going to get President Trump's financial records. And understand, this is simply a fishing expedition, as I've said before. You look at how complicated the tax system is. It's been said that any law that is sufficiently complex is the same as having no law at all. And if you've got a law as complex as the income tax, and you multiply that by the complexity of a major diversified international corporation like the business that President Trump presided over, you get an infinite number. They're going to find something, or they will manufacture something, just like an IRS audit agent who doesn't like you will find something there. And, you know, it is a given. Many stories about that. When we look at what's been going on, President Trump, this article, remember Michael Cohen, the lying lawyer that President Trump had, who was ripping off everybody in both directions. He was ripping off Trump. He was ripping off the people that he was interacting with on the behalf of Trump. Then he turned against President Trump. But one of the things that came back against him was, if you remember, he had a lot of money invested in taxi medallions in New York City. And I feel sorry for a lot of these taxi drivers. I don't feel sorry for Michael Cohen. But I feel sorry for these taxi drivers and the taxi companies, because they have to pay in these big cities like New York and Washington, D.C. They'll pay $500,000 or $1 million to get a license from the city. And then they have to be subjected to a real white glove inspection at just at any time. They have actually, I did a report on it. Can't find that on YouTube anymore, but I did a report on it. Maybe we'll get some of these archives out of Infowars.com and put them up on the new YouTube channel. You can find me on YouTube, at least for the time being, Libertarian, YouTube.com/Libertarian. But when I was in Washington, D.C., I interviewed a taxi driver about what kind of inspections they have to go through. They have a special police force or bureaucracy that's just there to inspect taxis and so forth, putting regulations against them as to how often now they have to change their cars, regardless of what shape they're in. These guys could repair these cars faithfully, make them last forever, but they don't care. They're just going to arbitrarily say if it's more than a certain age, you've got to get rid of it. And they have to go through all these regulations, and the Uber people don't have to do that at all. And now we have this situation of these taxi drivers in New York City, many of them poor immigrants who came in. Over the last 12 years, they said thousands of foreigners have poured their life savings into buying these taxi medallions. They've been encouraged by the same bankers who ran the real estate scams, creating a Ponzi scheme. Now these medallions are worthless. And a lot of them are committing suicide. Welcome back. Let's talk about what's going on with Huawei, with Google, with the Commerce Department, the Trump administration. As many people pointed out, it's looking like a cold war in terms of technology. And it only underscores the importance, the vital importance of 5G. It is going to be the infrastructure of the future, folks. They're not building bridges or repairing roads anymore. They're going to lock you into the cities, and the way they're going to control you is with 5G. You should be very concerned about that. I mean, look at how important this is to the American government, to the Pentagon, to the Chinese communists. That should give you an idea of just how powerful and how dangerous this is to your freedom, let alone your health. But as this is going back and forth, as Michael Every of Rabobank pointed out, Beijing has now demanded their giant pandas that they loaned to the San Diego Zoo. They want them now returned immediately. It's gotten that serious. As he said, it's pandemonium. Yeah, there's a big black market of endangered species, and this is evidently a black and white market. And they said, According to China's Global Times, that's the official state paper, Chinese society must acknowledge that a fiercer strategic rivalry is unavoidable. Huawei cannot lose, nor can China. And as I reported yesterday, they have these old films about the Korean War showing the Chinese and the North Koreans as allies and heroes and the Americans as villains and losers. They're rerunning all of those on Chinese television. The 1952 Battle of Shanganling boosted China's position in negotiations. They said the slogan of this film is, there's no equal negotiation without fighting. And now, as he points out, they are pulling out the big guns. No more pandas. As a matter of fact, they're asking for the giant pandas that they loaned to San Diego Zoo to be returned immediately. They're pulling their pandas. China will be able to ensure that they're handed back the correct pandas rather than cheap U.S. fakes. Especially, after all, the Chinese zoo, as we have already seen, were peddling a hairy dog and pretending that it was a lion. So they want the real thing. And they're going to be able to determine that because they're going to have the facial recognition technology to do it. And all the other biometric stuff, right? And if they're not obedient pandas, they're going to go off to the re-education camp, I guess. But the article that was on Drudge Report yesterday by Michael Snyder, End of the American Dream, 5G, hundreds of respected scientists sound the alarm about the health effects of 5G networks that go up nationwide. And this is something that I've talked about many times. That alone should be enough to have us reject the 5G technology. As I pointed out yesterday, you've got weather services saying, oh, you know, we're reading microwave radiation from weather satellites. That's how we do our weather satellite prediction. We pull back all these radiation signatures to help us. We feed that into the models. That helps us to predict weather patterns and so forth. We're going to lose that with 5G because the 5G signals are going to be wiping that out. They're at the same frequency spectrum as these other natural radiation signals. And that should also be a concern to you as far as health goes. But people aren't concerned about that. They're concerned about whether or not we can predict the weather. And they are concerned about whether or not they can predict your political moves and your behaviors. It's not just the weather that they're concerned. They're far more interested. They'll give up predicting the weather. They want to predict whether there's going to be a political storm or not. And that's why they want 5G, for the same reason that they established social media. So yesterday we had the Commerce Department officially blacklisting Huawei, dozens of its affiliates on Friday. You had other corporations besides Google join in this. You had Intel, Qualcomm, Broadcom have all stopped doing business with Huawei because, again, the federal government realizes just how vital 5G and this technology is going to be in terms of surveilling and controlling you. As a result, Google's share price plummeted by 2.5%, stoking fears of a technology cold war. And so the American government pulled back a little bit after all these different companies did that. They said, well, we're going to extend a temporary license, 90 days and so forth. So they kind of backpedaled and softened that a little bit. We'll see what happens with this. But if they continue to go on with this, what is the fallout of this? Well, they say that you'll still be able to use the apps that you have on your existing phones. You would still get the full Android experience. But for future phones and for future updates, they would not be available if the Commerce Department did not pull that back, if they stuck with that. So this isn't anything that even really affects anybody immediately. And here in the United States, there's restrictions on Huawei phones to start with. You know, this 90-day temporary general license that was just issued yesterday to take the sting out of that isn't really going to have much effect. We'll have to see what happens with that. And, of course, why is this happening? Well, it was just a couple of months ago that we had all the stories. It was back in May. It was 2 months ago, the end of May. We had all these stories coming out in the Washington Post and Bloomberg. Mainstream media was even talking about how Google needed a lesson in patriotism. That was the headline of Bloomberg. Washington Post, Google CEO quietly met with military leaders at the Pentagon, seeking to smooth tensions over drone artificial intelligence and other issues. Pentagon says all of Google's work on drones is exempt from the Freedom of Information Act. So at the same time that Google is trying to insinuate itself into the military-industrial complex, and you've got a lot of Google employees that are very angry about that, they're also very angry about the fact that Google was doing the same thing with the Chinese government with a Project Dragonfly, helping them with their great firewall of China to hide information from their citizens to give them curated search results and so forth. So Google is trying to appease two different masters here, a very precarious situation for them. And I don't feel sorry for them at all, quite frankly. It's kind of a bit of a schadenfreude, a dark joy at the situation that they're in. I'm reading a book right now by George Gilder that I would recommend to all of you. A very interesting take on all of this as he identifies the basic philosophy of Google and the other technocratic elite as being neo-Marxists. And he is exactly right. I mean, they have the same perspective as Karl Marx. And again, there's a certain creepy undercurrent of the occult in everything that they're doing with their connection with the transhumanist movement. Google is really the one that is pushing that more than anybody else, with Ray Kurzweil believing that they're going to somehow transfer their consciousness, the essence. They don't even know what they are. But also the heavy connection that they have with the Desert Festival, Burning Man, every year that they do in that. But there's been this tension between the two. I'm looking at this and wondering if right now they feel like they can make more money out of milking the Pentagon than they can the Communist Party under President Xi. We'll have to see how this thing shakes out. Joining us in the next segment will be Matt Bracken, and he's going to be talking about the Game of Thrones. Not the TV series, but the one that is an ongoing, never-ending story out of Washington, D.C. We'll be right back with Matt Bracken. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Joining us now is Matt Bracken, and Matt has been a frequent guest on here. He hasn't been on for a while. It's good to have you back, Matt. Of course, you can find his website at enemiesforeignanddomestic.com. And I wanted to talk to Matt a little bit about the Game of Thrones in Washington, because that's the one that really matters. It isn't the contrived one that everybody was so upset about this last week. And now as we see the momentum turn, and as we see Barr looking to investigate these people, and of course we've talked about this for a very long time. We know that Brennan, Comey, these other people have been conspiring to do this. And I've talked about this here at InfoWars. We were talking about it 2 years ago, exactly what was happening. But it has now all been substantiated, just as we talked about how the surveillance state was spying on all Americans. And eventually we got the documents from Snowden and so forth. Now we see the documents about the coup attempt against President Trump. So I want to talk to Matt and get his take on where this is going to be headed as they now move apparently into another stage to try to come after President Trump and audit him financially, since all of this Russian collusion stuff has collapsed in a heap of lies. So thank you for joining us, Matt.
It's good to be back.
Give us your take on what's happening right now in terms of, we've got a lot of people talking about a big bullseye on Brennan as kind of being the mastermind. We thought that he was that for quite some time, as you see this connection between U.S. intelligence agencies. The real foreign collusion was between the U.S. intelligence agencies and those in Britain, as well as the government in the Ukraine. I mean, all of those were elements of collusion, foreign collusion against President Trump.
Well, once again, we see the globalist underpinnings of all of this. And it's sort of we can see this matrix, because the United Kingdom and the Five Eyes services were happy to go along with our own deep state to try to keep a nationalist, a populist out of the White House. You know, the same elitists in Britain who were the anti-Brexiteers, you know, who are the globalists that want to keep Britain tied into the EU, which is sort of a stepping stone to global government. they were more than happy to cooperate with Brennan, Clapper, and Comey because they all share the same goal, which is globalism. Yeah. And globalism, as we know, is just, you know, it's the latest morphing of Marxism. It's just the rebranding and repackaging of Marxism.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, George Gilder, the book I'm reading, Life After Google, talks about these tech giants as neo-Marxists. He said, you're just like Karl Marx himself. They believe that all the issues of production have been solved. It's only an issue of redistribution. And they believe that they should be the ones doing the redistribution. So there is this common currency of Marxism behind these people who want to rule the world, isn't there?
Right. And that's why they're, in every case, they're against borders and national sovereignty. Mm-hmm. And this is why they want to keep, you know, so-called refugees flooding into Europe and to the USA. They're going to basically dilute our citizenship. Our vote will become meaningless. We're going to be, you know, just swamped and drowned by, you know, refugees from poor, low, basically, you know, low IQ countries that are coming here to vote for welfare. And as soon as they get the vote, they will. And the Democrats will give them the vote as soon as possible. We've already seen this in California where, you know, legally, technically, they may not be allowed to vote. But when they advertise, come and get your driver license, and on the same form is an automatic voter card.
Oh, yeah.
And then they announce on Spanish radio and television, don't worry, nobody's ever been prosecuted. And there's not even an office set up to investigate voter fraud. So,
well, I believe that if this Supreme Politburo that we have, a lot of people call the Supreme Court, I believe that if they take off this census question, I mean, the federal judge there that said, no, you got to keep it there because if you take that off, California's going to lose representation and they're going to lose political power. If we allow them to count the people who are foreign citizens criminally trespassing the United States, they will get more political power. They'll get more political power both in Congress and in the Electoral College in California by counting foreign citizens who are here. And they'll also get more money. And they're handing it out left and right. You've got the governor there just saying that he's going to give free medical care to anybody who comes here illegally. So it's just a big magnet for the anchor babies, isn't it?
Yeah, the plan is very clear. It's very obvious. I call California Calizuela. And you might think, well, gosh, why would the Democrats want to ruin, you know, the former Golden State? It doesn't matter if the state is ruined. The elites don't care if California becomes Calcutta in a bad sense, because the elites live in gated communities, walled compounds like Zuckerberg. And if it's Mad Max dystopia outside on the sidewalks, who cares? The fact is that California went from being Republican to a one-party Democrat state, and to a large extent by mass immigration from the third world. And that is now the model for all 50 states. And it won't even take all 50. If Florida flips, and it very easily could, or Texas, in the next presidential election, it's over. The entire country then will be on a glide, an unstoppable glide path to being Calizuela times 50, and a permanent Democrat in power structure. And it doesn't matter if the country's wrecked, because to the rulers, it doesn't matter if the country is in ruins. They're happy to rule the ruins. I mean, look at cities like Baltimore,
it's much more effective,
Chicago.
Yeah, it's much more effective.
You just have to just look at any of these failed cities that have been run by the Democrats for the last, you know, half century. The Democrats aren't ever going to say, gee, I guess we screwed up. We need to, like, rethink our policies. It doesn't matter. I call these cities, these blue hives, I call them Democrat vote harvesting plantations. So it's the new form of slavery is addict people to welfare benefits and then harvest their votes to ensure Democrat power forever. That's working.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Creating dependency is their path to power. And, of course, the open borders. We just had Ilhan Omar here in Austin yesterday speaking to Texas young Democrats. And she was saying, you know, the usual stuff. It was red meat to these people because it's the only thing they ever say. Republicans are racist, sexist, and xenophobic. And yet, you know, when you look at Ilhan Omar, she is exhibit A of what the open borders are bringing to our country. As we see in France, we've got massive number of illegals storming an airport, saying France does not belong to the French. You've got the German people are pushing back. A new poll says 95% of them said Islam is not a part of Germany. So we've got these European elections that are coming up at the end of the month, and people are starting to push back against that, not just in the UK, but even in France and Germany. There's an escalating pushback. It may be too late.
Yeah, the most hopeful thing, recent news, is the election in Australia, because what it shows is that the polls are purely propaganda. They're push polls. They're psychological operation polls. Something like 55 or 60 polls in a row predicted that the Labour Party was going to win, and the Conservatives, which are called the Liberals in Australia, they won. So people aren't freely telling pollsters what they really believe. So when you hear now that, oh, Biden, he's going to win against Trump in this or that state, I don't believe any of it. The same pollster said that Hillary was going to win by, 10 to 15 points. So the polls, I think, are discrediting themselves, which I think is an optimistic sign for 2020.
Because when you have everybody in social media and the mainstream media demonizing a particular political figure, they're afraid to say that they support that individual. And of course, in Australia, the two big issues there were there essentially the Green New Deal down there, climate change. Al Gore helped the conservatives by going down there and giving his side of the story. But it was also immigration. Those are the two things, open borders and climate change to take away the economy.
Yeah,
and they rejected
Australia,
those.
Yeah, luckily for Australia, they're surrounded by ocean. So they were able years ago to stop the open flow of refugees. And their Labour people haven't been able to reopen those floodgates. Unfortunately, we have a wide open border, and it's a shame. I wish that President Trump would just grasp the nettle. I think it would be rewarded, even though he would be called called all kind of terrible names. We can just stop people from coming in.
Well, he has to do it. He has to do it for the election. He has to do it for his own credibility, but he has to do it to save the country. We're going to be right back with Matt Bracken. Stay with us.
Starts to make me wonder where fruits of what I do are going. He says in love and war all is fair. He's got cards he ain't showing.
Welcome back. We have elections, of course, at the end of the month. European Parliament elections. And since Theresa May has delayed and delayed and delayed, as Nigel Farage called her, Theresa Maybe, she is now saying, well, let me stay until June sometime, because I want this same proposal that has already been rejected three times, I want it to come up a fourth time for a vote. The Conservative Party that she leads has plummeted in the poll. So what have they resorted to as Nigel Farage has come back with his Brexit party, and they have shot to the top? The Conservative Party is now at the very bottom of the polls. As a matter of fact, if you look at the different political parties, they got their Brexit party is at 34%, Liberal Democrats at 17%. So the number two party is half the support of Nigel Farage's Brexit party. Labour Party is at 15%, the Green Party at 11%, Conservatives now at 9%, 9%. Nigel Farage's party is at 34%. Support in Wales is particularly impressive. And so you had a situation where they resorted to throwing milkshakes at Nigel Farage, at UKIP leaders, at Tommy Robinson. But of course, now they're throwing bricks at Tommy Robinson. They're going a little bit beyond that. And we just had another incident of this against Nigel Farage. Of course, a couple of days ago, as he was going to this area in Scotland, where there's not a lot of support for Brexit, McDonald's had been asked by the police not to sell milkshakes, because this had become a thing to sell milkshakes. So they said, we're not going to do it. So then Burger King goes out and says, we're still selling them. Have fun. And a lot of people at that time said, this is absolutely disgusting. Burger King is promoting violence. I'm stunned. And they came back, oh, no, we're not endorsing violence at all. But then, of course, it did happen. It did happen, as you can see there. But Nigel Farage is stirred. He is not shaken. What do you think about what's coming up here, Matt? We're talking to Matt Bracken.
Well, if you can get close enough to throw a milkshake, you can get close enough to throw a jar full or a cup full of acid.
That's right.
So it's absolutely not a joke. And
that's right.
And yeah, Paul Joseph Watson's doing great reports both in on YouTube, where he's still allowed a channel for the time being, and on Summit News this morning. You know, when the same things happen to politicians, then they go crazy. I mean, even if the politicians are insulted on the street, they treat it like a terrorist attack. But when populists,
unless it's somebody like Nigel Farage, yeah,
right. The elite politicians, mm-hmm. anti-Brexit politicians. But when Nigel Farage, Tommy Robinson, Benjamin Sargon of Arcot, he's running, they're all attacked. It's just a big joke. Well,
yeah,
they've got to be very glad that it's not yet ratcheting up like 1930s Germany, because eventually what happens is there's going to be a reaction to these Antifa communists. You know, the Antifas are basically the deniable stormtroopers of the elites. They go out to shut down Tommy Robinson and Richard Benjamin, I think that's his name. But you know, there's no pushback. You know, mm-hmm. the conservatives are still at the stage of pleading with the police. Well, in the case of Tommy Robinson, there's video out of the police leading these hundreds of, you know, masked Muslims for miles right to him. You know, like, follow me, guys. Here's the police taking you to him. I wonder if they handed out the bricks. I mean, it's almost like Clockwork Orange these days in Britain.
It is.
The police are so corrupt. But yeah, eventually there's going to be a pushback in the other direction, and it's going to get ugly. But first, the Brexit thing with Nigel Farage going to the top, I think even Brits that were sitting on the you know, kind of in the middle of the road on voting Brexit 2 years ago, now they just see it's a joke. This is a trap. You join the EU, it's like joining the mafia. Once in, never out. You're in, you're never going to get out. If we have to hold the election over and over for years to come, you're never getting out. So I think that even fence-sitting Brits are saying, we've got to do this.
And what Theresa May is offering them is even worse deal than they've got right now. I mean, right now, it's not just the open borders issue. That is a big issue. But it is also the control of the economy. When they had the initial Brexit election back in 2016, they were talking about the fact that in oceans where they had fished freely, they now had limits that were set for them by politicians in Brussels who had never even set foot in Britain or been near those seas. And so now they were telling them how much they could take out and so forth. So micromanagement of their economy by unelected bureaucrats in Brussels, and they'd had enough of that. And yet what Theresa May offered them was to essentially say, well, we'll get out of Brexit, but they're still going to be able to control our economy. So they have now, you know, if they took her plan, it would be regulation without any representation.
Yeah, it's actually insulting and demeaning. I mean, it's you know, there's just no respect for the average Brits at all. It's basically an announcement by the elites. You are peasants. Your vote means nothing. Shut up and just go along being a slave to the unelected EU Politburo. And mm-hmm. I think that more and more Brits have had enough. And like in Australia, you know, you can't go by the polls, because the polls are obviously garbage now. People aren't, you know, when somebody calls you on the phone, which is its own issue, who answers a landline? People call you on the phone to ask you, you know, do you support the Green Deal, or are you some kind of a, you know, pro-pollution fascist? People aren't giving their candid opinions.
That's right.
And I think that the hang-up rate on pollsters is so high, the people that do answer, that sample is junk. It's ridiculous. So I think that the pro-Brexit party is going to win big. And
absolutely right when you talk about how dangerous this is, because just as we saw with Nazi Germany, the Nazis would look the other way if their thugs and their brown shirts were coming after the Jews or whatever. Now they're looking the other way. The establishment authorities are looking the other way as these types of escalating attacks against Nigel Farage and others are going there. And of course, I'm glad that Nigel Farage is going to prosecute this guy who did it. He actually bragged about it on social media, said, I did it. I effing did it. And then, you know, showed the police, and he wasn't at all concerned about doing it. Nigel Farage is going to press charges, and he ought to, because as you point out, this can get very dangerous very quickly. They're already throwing bricks now at Tommy Robinson, and that is being celebrated and overlooked by the police in many cases.
Right, and it's even worse in Germany. People have been beaten with, you know, bats. Cars are bombed. Storefronts have their windows broken out. So yeah, it's as bad as it is in Britain. It's just as bad in Britain, and I think, or in Germany, and I think that there's going to be a backlash in both countries, as you pointed out. Something in a call in to a TV program, 95% said Islam does not belong in Germany. And, yeah, the Germans can only take it for so long.
Yeah, and as difficult as it's gotten in other areas, in Britain, I think they are kowtowing to Islam more than any other place. Here's an example of this, as reported by Sputnik News. They have a doctor at Royal Stoke University Hospital, Dr. Keith Wolverson. He is now under investigation because he asked a Muslim woman to lift her veil as part of his examination. And they're having to put together a petition to try to save this doctor because he asked her to lift her veil as part of a medical examination.
Is yeah, insane. In the identity politics hierarchy, Islam always wins. And you can come up with all kind of theories, but it's really simple. Gays aren't going to cut your head off or blow you up. You know, transsexuals aren't going to cut your head off or blow you up. So people will come up with all kind of excuses and rationalizations. But in the end, Islam and Sharia always win because people have a gut fear of it, you know, of the consequences of opposing it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist for the other identity groups.
You know, I mentioned today, Matt, as I began the program, I talked a good deal about a couple of leaks to Breitbart from Facebook employees talking about how they had people they labeled as hate agents. And, of course, that was all of us who were kicked off of Facebook here with InfoWars and so forth. But now they've got Candace Owens. She's on the list to be, you know, banned, according to them. They're collecting information about other people, so they've been leaking that out there. I said we ought to just embrace this and say we are agents of hate, H-A-T-E, you know, humans against the technocratic elite, you know, kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something. And we ought to wear that banning with pride. But, of course, it is a very dangerous situation as far as elections go, because if they can control the speech of people, they can control the elections.
Yeah, if the Democrats think it was a big deal that the Russians spent like, what, a couple hundred thousand dollars on Facebook ads, that's nothing compared to them putting their thumb on the scale with their algorithms.
That's
you might be on social media, but they've effectively turned your volume down to 0.0, you know,
that's right.
And they've multiplied the left's volume to 200%. So it's, you know, you think, well, I mean, I go on Facebook, I'm there, but you're not sharing. Nobody is seeing your posts. So you might as well not be there.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen that happen on Twitter, where I still am. But, of course, they have toned it down to where I get about 10% to 20% of what I used to get when I had half the number of people. That's the way that works. All right. Thanks for joining us. Matt Bracken, Enemies, Foreign and Domestic.